As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The presenting sponsor for today's episode, Hear That Podcast Growlin', is Visa, a network working for everyone. All right, welcome into HTPG. Paul Diener Jr. here with Jay Morrison of The Athletic. What's up?
Hey, doing great. It's a lot more interesting to cover this team when they win, and that's what's going on right now.
I'm uncomfortable. I don't know how to do this. It's very weird not opening with angst and frustration and fire everyone and when will it ever get better. You still have the angry minority that will always be out there even after a blowout win on the road of still frustrated over things. And there's lots of things to critique, to be mad about. But in general, a nice little feeling amongst the fan base right now. It's very off-putting. It's hard to know how to cover this team this way. I'm really trying to adjust on the fly here. It's been a while, 5 years actually.
You know, they fans always say no moral victories when a team plays well and end up losing. I mean, what would be the counter to that? There should be no crying after a win. No,
not after one like that.
No ugly wins. No. I mean, you just take what you can get. It's a bottom line business. And yes, the Lions are bad. And yes, the Bengals started a little slow again, although they did get a touchdown on their opening drive for the first time all year. But that's going to be the case in any game. You're always going to have things to critique. And if you're going to focus on the little things, you should either be a coach or maybe find a different hobby.
Or on First Take.
Yeah,
you're just gonna yell and yell angrily no matter what. I mean, I look, it's there's a lot of interesting. The team has just came off a blowout win of a bad team. They're 4-2. They are, you know my favorite thing, Jay. If the playoffs started today, they do not, because no one would ever tolerate a 6-game season. However. You know, you're right in the mix and you have a massive game. We talked a few weeks ago about the Green Bay game, about, okay, this is about perception. But it's house money. You're in a good spot. You were 3-1 and no one's expecting you to beat the Packers. And you just kind of, you're doing it and people are going to pay attention to you a little bit. It's a chance for people to really pay attention to who you are and what you're doing. I think you have that again here, but with much higher stakes. A trip to Baltimore is still a touch of house money because you are 4-2. Baltimore is very good. You know, you still get them to, they come to your house later. You've got a bunch of North games in front of you still. But the possibility of what this could mean is so high. It is a game changer type arrival game because it's not beating Aaron Rodgers and somebody from the other conference. That would have been great and fine and fun. There's a lot of good. This is how you climb the ladder. This is how you become relevant. You win in your division. You win against a team that has owned you since Zach Taylor got here. And you do it in their house when they're playing great. You do that, and boy, does everything feel different. It's the ultimate arrival game. And we have referenced this a number of times, and I hate going back so far, but we talk about parallels in a young emerging quarterback. At Baltimore in 2004, when Carson Palmer leads a come-from-behind win, was the absolute trampoline catapult into the 2005 season. Because they were the team on the block at the time, and they are the team on the block now. This is a massive opportunity, and the narrative that would come out of this game if the Bengals go to Baltimore and win is more than a narrative. It's a very real situation that, hey, this team, we need to start talking about them amongst contenders.
You said it. It's more than a narrative. Your favorite thing, if the playoffs start today, if the Bengals beat the Ravens Sunday in Baltimore, it doesn't matter what else happens in the rest of the league. They will be the sitting number one seed in the AFC. They will be tied for the best record in the conference. They do not have a conference loss. Yes, it's not even halfway through the season yet, so some people are going to scoff at even talking about playoffs. But you look at where this team came from. If they can win a game against an elite opponent on their field, a division rival, and go to New York as the sitting number one seed in the AFC, that's significant. I don't care what time of year it is. That means something.
Would be heavily favored to go 6-2
mm-hmm.
with a win at the Ravens in your pocket. I mean, look, I went through and there's a football reference. Pro Football Reference has a great algorithm where you trot in what the record was of a team mm-hmm. at any point, and they will trot out the history of that, how it projects. And I went through yesterday and plugged in 5-2 and what kind of, you know, that means in the big picture. Now you have 17 games now and you have an extra playoff spot. But just think about this. If you look at the last 5 years, teams that started 5-2, what the Bengals will do on Sunday, if they can win, they make the playoffs 79% of the time, and the average finish was 11-5, and it includes each of the last three Super Bowl champions. That's what your company looks like. And I would say they would feel like a team capable of that if they went into Baltimore and won, when you consider what Baltimore has been this year.
And that's what you looked up. That's teams that start exactly 5-2. Mm-hmm. If you look at 5-2 or better, that's probably almost every Super Bowl champion the last few years. It is. It would be a significant step forward to go to Baltimore and win. And you wonder the whole house money discussion, what happens if they lose a close one? Because, you know, I posed the question before Green Bay, what happens if they lose, or after the loss, before the power rankings came out, would they go up even with the loss? And they did. In almost every power ranking out there, the national perception resulted in the Bengals climbing a few spots in power rankings after a loss, which you don't see very often. Now, would that happen again if they play Baltimore tough and lose a close one? I don't know. There's not much more room to climb unless they win, because they're in that 10 to 12 range on most of the power rankings. But it will be interesting to see what that narrative is if they lose another close game to another elite opponent. Once with Green Bay kind of got people's attention, you do it again at Baltimore and maybe people start thinking, well, it the team's not there yet. They haven't learned to win the big games. And of course, if they do win that game, then it just flips everything. We're going to be seeing a whole lot of national folks sniffing around Paul Brown Stadium over the next few weeks.
They will be, and we'll be looking at, you know, I really think we've talked about this before. I think that December 5th Chargers game feels like a very real flex possibility. You've got, I believe it's Seahawks and Niners in the Sunday night spot that week. And who knows what's going on with Russ, and the Niners have lost a bunch of games here, and there people are lapping up Justin Herbert. People are could be lapping up Joe Burrow. And that's so if you're pointing to, a lot of those Sunday night games don't make sense that they would get out of those when you look at where they're at and what those teams should be. Keep an eye on that game. And I mean, but look, this Sunday is it's just a huge game. It's funny when you look at the post game stuff, a lot of the post game social stuff from the team or whatever that came out. It's remarkable. You look at Joe Mixon, I think brought him up after the game and immediately is talking about Baltimore, stressing about Baltimore. Everybody better show up tomorrow and be ready because Baltimore, like it. It was funny. I was talking to some people in the organization, and it was like there was a lot of obvious instant satisfaction, but this might be as quickly as your brain turns to the next week as we've seen around here. They talked about having a sense of purpose and bouncing back from the loss to Green Bay. I think there's a real sense of purpose in the building of understanding of what this Sunday means. This is the one, if they really are a team, if they really do end up making the playoffs and who knows, winning the North or something, it feels like this is the one you would look back on. Man, when they went to Baltimore, that's when you knew it was real. And there's, if it's not, there's plenty of time. That's why I say, I think there's still some house money element to Sunday. You know what I mean? When you talk about so many opportunities down the stretch with the Chargers and the Niners, I guess, and Baltimore again at your house and Kansas City at your house. I mean, you have lots of opportunities to get in the playoffs, even as a wild card, and get a big win or two right at the back end of your schedule that makes you feel like, man, they could be a scary out for somebody. But if you want to take the big step this year, you want it to be the big boys, look at the North. The North is attainable, folks. But you got to do it by going through the Ravens. I mean, the Browns, between the Baker injury and the loss they've had and some of the – they're looking very human. In Pittsburgh, we kind of know what issues they have. You know, you show that you're right there with the Ravens, and it feels like you could be starting to look at a two-horse race as the season progresses potentially.
Yeah, especially if with a game against Cleveland coming right after that trip to New York. I mean, they could really take control of the division. Getting ahead of ourselves, that's still way off. I don't think it's out of the question. The Bengals beat Baltimore and go to New York and lay an egg, and they end up 5-3 the opposite way people think it'll happen, with a loss at Baltimore and a win at New York. So yes, young team, still a lot left to prove, but you're right. It would be a huge step. They're just, some games mean more. Every coach says they all count the same, which mathematically is true. But for a young team trying to find its footing, trying to prove they belong, going into Baltimore would be monumental. And going into Baltimore and winning would be monumental.
Let us not forget the ass kickings this team took at the hands of the Ravens last year. Like, literally. Not little ones. Not a tiny spanking, okay? A thorough, absolute embarrassing destruction there, and specifically in week 17 when this team had already packed their bags clearly for the offseason. There is something to that too. But I think there's a learning factor to playing the Ravens, really to playing the Ravens and the Steelers, and that's why I think is interesting with Joe Burrow. And again, you know, the Steelers weren't their full defensive self, or really much of anything, when they played in Pittsburgh in week 3. But there is you do have to learn how to play these teams, whether as a coach new to the division or as a quarterback new to the division or as a defense new. There's just a different type of game you have to play. Look at the Chargers. Look at the Chargers in Baltimore this past week getting just beat up, right? It is like anytime a team that doesn't play the Ravens often goes in there, it's like, whoa, this is different football. It's just a different type of game, a different type of physicality, a different type of defensive aggression that is jarring if you're not used to it. And Burrow and his staff and a lot of these players, I think, now have a better feeling of being prepared for what you need to be to beat Baltimore. What have games at the top of this division always looked like over the last 10, 15 years between the best of the best? Pittsburgh and Baltimore, where you're like, how is everyone not concussed after the game? When the Bengals were playing the Steelers, where every game is just an absolute bloodbath. It's kind of the way this division ends up being when the best rise to play the best. And if that's who you're going to be, you got to beat them at their game in some capacity. And it takes a while to learn what that means.
Yeah. And you talk about how different it is playing Baltimore. I mean, that was Justin Herbert's first time facing him. This is not Joe Burrow's first time facing him. And you had that great story last year about his recall and how he can rely on things that he's seen from a team previously. And we saw it, you know, his second game against Cleveland last year was one of his best games. Game they should have won. The defense gave it up right at the end. He comes back his second game against Pittsburgh, obviously different year, but he beats Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh the second time seeing them now, second time seeing Baltimore. I think there's a lot of optimism in that, knowing what Joe Burrow is physically and mentally and how he'll be better equipped to deal with that Baltimore defense this time than he was last year in, what was it, week 5 when they played him last year.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We will obviously have more on the Ravens specifically on Thursday, and we'll talk to our guy in Baltimore, Jeff Zeribek. Love hearing from him about what has been a pretty wild couple of months for the Ravens. And the fact they're sitting where they are right now is pretty remarkable. But we'll have a lot more on them on Thursday and get into that game. We're talking about Burrow. We're talking about the offense. I do want to talk a little about this defense, and then we'll, of course, bring in Mo Egger for his regular segment, which I've got a couple things I'm very excited about talking about. And we'll talk a little bit about – we'll do some role play in a nice way. We'll talk about roles for players going forward here. We'll recap some Bengals growler bet and some run passer boot. The defense, I mean, really a big opportunity for them. They played Aaron Rodgers. But outside of that, you know, we haven't really seen, you know, great quarterbacks. You haven't really played that top tier. And there's a very, I'd say, a quality top tier that has even emerged even more this year. And you look, you know, and I would put Burrow in that. But they haven't really played a lot of those, really just Rodgers. Cousins is maybe playing at that level a little bit, but he wasn't necessarily super in week one. But Lamar is. Lamar Jackson is doing his Superman stuff right now. You know, whether you're talking about the insane comeback against the Colts, whether you're talking about just the destruction of the Chargers, I mean, he's running it, he's throwing it at elite level. He's doing everything you need to do to be a great quarterback, and he's right in the middle of the MVP conversation. Can this defense that has been so good to this point, for the most part, can they hold down this guy? Can they hold down this offense? It's a very interesting question to see how that plays out on Sunday.
They kind of did already. If you remember back that game in Baltimore last year, they did a really good job. I mean, Darius Phillips, it was maybe the best game he's played, where he would come in and break down and not let Lamar get out of the pocket. They got killed in that game because the offense did absolutely nothing, and Joe Burrow had a green jersey. I mean, it was the Baltimore defense won that game. What the Bengals defense did in that game was pretty impressive, and that defense is nowhere near what this defense is. So it doesn't mean it's going to translate. I mean, you saw what happened in week 17 when they scored, Baltimore scored 38. But as you said, the Bengals had packed their bags by that time. They were making offseason plans. And I think that week 5 game and the plan they had for Lamar Jackson, and they didn't shut down the Ravens offense, but they slowed them down. It was something that the Ravens admitted they hadn't seen much of, and they really struggled to get some footing offensively. And, you know, who knows what Lou can dial up this time around, with so many more pieces to play with. And this defense has just been really everyone expected it would be better, but not this much better. And you're right, as far as facing elite quarterbacks, it's just elite offenses in general. The Green Bay right now is 10 in offensive DVOA, or going into last week they were. The new ones aren't up yet. But every other team that the Bengals have faced is in the bottom half of the league. Minnesota 17, Pittsburgh 22, Jacksonville 23, Detroit 25, the Bears 31. So this is obviously a huge test with Baltimore, but I think if there's anything that should give the Bengals hope on that defensive side of the ball, it's what they did last year against Lamar in week 5 at Baltimore.
Lamar was still kind of coming back from injury in that game, but I mean, still, he wasn't hesitant to run, and they did do a great job containing him. And now, I'd argue you have somebody much better fit to replicate what Darius Phillips did, which is Mike Hilton, mm-hmm. you know, who's a pro at coming in off that slot edge and chasing down, whether it's quarterbacks or running backs or whatever, one of the best blitzers in the game. I just, you know, he's kind of made for this type of a contest. Logan Wilson, you know, the emergence that you've seen from him, these guys that can run sideline to sideline with them. You do have more of those. You know, so much about stopping Baltimore is about stopping the run, but they have, you know, Lamar has been roasting people throwing it this year. And so it's going to be there. It's certainly not going to be easy, but I just think, you know, we talked to Von Bell yesterday and he's like, yeah, of course we know what this opportunity can be, but we know what we got. We know what we got brewing over here. And there's just such a confidence they're playing with. And their ability. I mean, one thing they have faced, we talked about quarterbacks, they have faced some of the best running backs and running games in this league and shut them all down. I mean, say what you want to about Detroit. DeAndre Swift was one of the best things they had going, and their running game was one of the best things they had going, and they totally immobilized them. Dalvin Cook, David Montgomery when he was healthy. I mean, we've seen this. Aaron Jones got out for one big run, but they generally did a pretty good job about him. I think it's kind of really honestly with the strength of the team in that, you know, guys like Reader and Ogunjobi and Tupo and Hubbard. I mean, that's their specialty. They can do the other stuff, but really it's kind of their specialty, and it's really put teams in a tough way, and they can only hope it can put Baltimore in a tough way.
It's amazing watching. I mean, I would like to do some screen caps, because if you did a screen cap of DJ Reader being blocked with the back coming through the hole, you're like, oh yeah, there's no way he's making that tackle. And then you split it 1 second later and he's thrown the blocker aside and he's dropping the guy. You're right. That has been the strength of this defense, the up the middle, the run defense. It's interesting. I looked it up. I don't want to say they're the most important stats for a defense, but they're right up there in significance. Points per game allowed, yards per game allowed, and yards per play allowed. The Bengals rank in the top 10, in the top 8, actually, of all three of those categories. They're 5th in points allowed, 8th in yards allowed, and 2nd in yards per play allowed. There's only 3 teams in the league that rank in the top 10 in all three of those. Buffalo's number 1 in all of them, and the Panthers also are up in the top 10 in all of those. But then you go beyond that, and the Bengals defense is also in the top 10 in red zone touchdown percentage, definitely a significant stat. Yards per rush, they're 8th. Yards per pass attempt, they're 5th. First downs allowed per game, they're 7th. I mean, they're getting it done all over the place. And again, they haven't played an elite offense, but it's just kind of a micro version of the macro we talked about all offseason is you get a young team and start building confidence and then just watch it snowball, watch it roll. And that's what we're seeing on that defensive side of the ball.
And, you know, Zach Taylor was talking about last week about points per drive being his most important stat as an offensive play caller. Bengals third in the NFL in points per drive are defensively 1.6. Bills and Cardinals are the only two teams ahead of them. You know, I mean, that's just it. When you look at these really kind of defining numbers, you see them show up here over and over again. And we do this. We are always talking about the offense because there's so much star power there and there's so much name recognition. And honestly, it's been a point of angst because it hasn't been great all the time. And the play caller discussion. And because of all of that, it's almost become ho-hum what this defense is doing. And they're the stars of this team. We're not making them that because they don't have the names. They are the stars of this team. When teams are looking at, oh, we got to play the Bengals right now, it's how are we going to score points on this defense? You know, Chidobe Awuzie is covering everything. Jesse Bates is one of the scariest center fielders in football. Logan Wilson has 4 interceptions. And their line is, and Trey Hendrickson is one of the best edge rushers in football right now. And their defensive interior is just killing people. You know, and we talked about the play right before halftime, right? The throw to Chase that really ignited everything. We talk about it every week. What people might not, the complimentary football aspect, the second down toss to DeAndre Swift by the Lions right before that, Sam Hubbard blows up in the backfield for a huge loss that allows the Bengals to instantly turn to timeout mode. It's essentially a sack. It was a sack of the running back. And when you make a play like that, it pushes the switch up to hit aggression mode and not worry about what Detroit was doing. They may have called a timeout anyway, even if it was a good play. But the fact that you pushed them back right there, now it becomes a tough to make third down. Boom, timeout, punt, and you have time to go make the play that you did. It's a game changer. Stuff like that is happening all the time too, and there's this attitude that's developed amongst them. We talked a little bit. It's just really embracing this no-nameness and the unselfishness and the tenacity, everything they sold to us over free agency and draft season of trying to put together a team of guys like that. Maybe they might not be the biggest names. It might not be total star power, but we're going to have a bunch of guys that are going to play that kind of relentless brand of football and see what it looks like. And this is what it looks like. It looks pretty good.
You know, you talked about Baltimore looking at, or even any opponent looking at them and saying, how are we going to score on this defense? And it starts with, well, find the weak spot and go after the weak spot. And it's, you know, kind of been assumed that Eli Apple has been that weak spot. And he's really played well lately. And you would think that would be the Lions' MO. Go find Eli Apple. Jared Goff only targeted him one time on Sunday. That means he was pretty good in coverage. And Eli Apple broke that pass up, by the way. So, yeah, there's the no-name aspect of it and the fact that there's no high-end stars, but there's also no low-end guys that are going to get you beat over and over and over again. And that was a great point you made, because at the end of the first half, the Bengals got the ball back. I think it was like 3 minutes, and you're like, oh, here they go. They go in their 3-minute offense, score, get the ball back, score again, blow them out. And it didn't happen. They went 3 and out with that when they got the ball with 3 minutes left. And it would have been easy for not easy, but it would have made sense for Detroit to go down and kind of bleed the clock there. And they get the score right before halftime. And that second down play changed everything. And instead, the Bengals call timeouts, get the ball back, and then get the spark from Chase. And then they were off and running after that. It's the same thing with turnovers. It seems like every time the Bengals have a turnover on offense, the defense either takes it right back or they limit the opposing offense to nothing or a field goal. It's just every time they're called on, they deliver.
There is no doubt. And, you know, I just think where we, because of the way this team is constructed, where all the big names are on offense, it's like we just keep looking over them. And certainly, you know, I feel like anytime I'm always on these national shows. Okay. You know, not always, I shouldn't say. I mean, when they have me on this year, it's always the same first three, four questions about Burrow and about Chase and what happened there, and maybe a Zach Taylor question. And at some point they will get around to asking why do you think this team is performing better than we thought? The defense has changed the ceiling of expectations on this team. Nobody thought this was a top five group. Third in the league in points per drive. You were just hoping that they wouldn't be the disaster that somehow Burrow could win a few weeks, not by shootout, you know? And here they are carrying this team, and in 6 weeks, we act like that's old hat. And it's, you know, that has changed. That is why this team is better. That is why the expectations have changed. That's why we're out here talking about they could win the North. They could be the one seed, right? It certainly isn't because the offense has been incredible. The offense has been very okay. It's because they have a top five defense right now. And now granted, it's yet to be truly tested. They had the test against Rodgers and they did a great job of bowing up when they needed to and forcing field goals. I think they were good enough to win that game. But the tests are going to continue as we go down the line here. You're going to have Cleveland and their incredible running game. We'll see how banged up they are. We know what they are. You're going to have Herbert. You're going to have Kyle Shanahan calling plays for San Francisco. You're going to have Lamar again. You're going to have Patrick Mahomes. They're going to have plenty of time to get tested. But right now, they look more than ready for it, and we'll learn even more about them on Sunday. All right, let's just take a quick break. Let's do this. I think it's Mo time. We're going to bring Mo in, and we're going to talk about his tweets. I'm very excited about this. As always, one of them was not just one tweet. We're going thread with his one that I just particularly enjoyed. So let's bring in ESPN 1530's Mo Egger. How are we doing, Mo?
I'm great, Paul. How are you?
I'm excellent, Jay. Jay's got Mo's tweet stats. What do you got this week? How do you do?
Another career high on this show. However, it comes with an asterisk because 119 tweets, but I think about 30-40% of them were Mo asking people to join him at the Hard Rock Casino to watch the Bengals games.
A company man.
Exactly. I do what I'm asked. I do what I'm asked. I do what I'm paid for.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You also are paid to tweet about the game. And there's one that I want to start with that is one that we've spent some time on, just a couple of minutes over the course of the last 6 months, really no year, some time on. And it's Penei Sewell has a great view of how well Ja'Marr Chase is playing.
So I'm mad because what I should have tweeted is what my colleague Tony Pike said to me on the radio yesterday. That between Penei Sewell and Ja'Marr Chase, the best blocker was Ja'Marr Chase because of yes. the block that helps bring Joe Mixon for the touchdown. But I mean, it was so easy to do. You had to know it was coming. You had to know the minute Ja'Marr Chase, sort of salted away a quality performance that the Ja'Marr Chase versus Penei Sewell tweet was going to come. It was a matter of who sent it. Who came with it first? Who was most creative? I don't know if I fall under that category, but you had to know it was coming. And I took a great amount of joy tweeting that and watching people take it and run with it.
I mean, we spent so much time on this topic. And now, granted, Trey Hendrickson's absolute destruction of Penei Sewell did not help anybody who was on Team Sewell. But that aside, even if he was out there stoning Trey Hendrickson, it was the perfect example of why Team Chase exists as the argument in the modern game, because those two plays change the game in invigorating the offense and putting the game away. I mean, that's, it's just as simple as that.
Yeah. I mean, Penei Sewell could have had a really good game. He didn't, but he could have, and it wouldn't have mattered to me because Ja'Marr Chase. And to me, that's sort of this whole discussion in a nutshell. Penei Sewell may end up being as good as advertised for his sake. I hope he is. There's no reason to pass judgment on him because of what's happened through the first six games. Trey Hendrickson can do that to a lot of tackles. I hope Penei Sewell is as good as advertised. There's no reason to root against that. But if Ja'Marr Chase gives the Bengals what they're looking for, then the verdict is in. Then they got the pick right. Now, did they get the draft right? Jackson Carmen's play is going to go a long way toward determining that. But the decision about Ja'Marr Chase versus Penei Sewell, if you boil it down to simply that, and I know there's other variables like, all right, how else do you go by building your offensive line? If you just simply go by, does Ja'Marr Chase give the Bengals what they're looking for? The answer on Sunday was yes. The answer so far this season has been yes. And the answer can remain yes, even if Penei Sewell turns into this, you know, next Anthony Munoz-esque tackle that everybody was talking about before the draft.
Can you even remember the last call you got on your show when someone said they should have taken Sewell instead of Chase?
I don't remember the last call on my show. I remember draft night, we were on the air and there were folks, not many, but there were folks who booed. And then we went to a break and Tony Pike and I were on the air and a guy came up to us and yelled and screamed that this was basically going to be the end of the Cincinnati Bengals. And I'm like, okay, look, his franchise is 53 years old. If we were to go and sort of hit these mileposts that could have marked the end of the franchise, there's a lot more of them and a lot more significant ones than not drafting an offensive lineman in round one. But look, it was I enjoyed, from a talk radio standpoint, I enjoyed the discussion because there was no wrong answer. And even now, I guess you could say there's not really a wrong answer. It had more to do with, I think, philosophy, some who maybe understand the modern game more than others, some personal preference. It was one of those great debates that was sort of open-ended, that everybody made great points. And, you know, I think you guys know me well enough. If you disagree, that was okay. I invited that. I wanted that. It was a more fun draft from a talk radio standpoint than last year when it was just, they're going to take Joe Burrow. It was a more fun draft than the previous year when they took Jonah Williams because, yeah, okay, fine, they take a lineman, and the argument against it was take Dwayne Haskins, which nobody felt that strongly about. This was, okay, they have a chance to take a great wide receiver, a great lineman. What do you think? And for 3 months, that conversation was a lot of fun. Now, what some and less fans, but more quote unquote experts have done and taken this whole thing, the Bengals should be punted from the NFL if they don't take Penei Sewell. They're irresponsible if they don't take Penei Sewell, automatically thinking they got it wrong and the franchise is doomed if they don't take Penei Sewell. I find those takes comical. And so my tweet was sort of more aimed at those folks more than it was aimed at fans who just simply thought Penei Sewell was the better pick. That's a perfectly acceptable and fine opinion. I didn't like some of the extremes that people went to sort of say that the Bengals got it wrong, or this is why they're a terrible organization, or they screwed it up, or Joe Burrow's now going to have his leg amputated because they didn't draft Penei Sewell. I thought all of that stuff was and is absurd.
And that's really a perfect line for you to use before we go to your second tweet.
I don't even know where this is going.
Because this technically wasn't one tweet, but we're going to reel off a bunch of them. Note to self, never work at the same radio station as Brian Rice. Now, I'm going to give background and go through the entire thread here before you start responding to this. So it started with this guy, Brian Rice. It actually technically started with Pat Forty, who is one of the most respected journalists in our country and specializes for a long time on college football. And he took a shot at Tennessee fans, I believe, for their throwing of many things onto the field, including golf balls and dip spit and anything you could ever possibly imagine. And he said it's a small thing, but by Pat Forty, and you won't care, but you're banned from our radio station, sports radio WNML in Knoxville, and I will literally fight anybody on our staff who tries to have you on. You are not welcome here. Tennessee fans have had enough of people like you. This was responded to nationally, just as you might think. People really did not care about Brian Rice, but I found your take to be particularly great. It continued. I would love to see the reaction of my colleagues if I ever send a tweet out like this. You've also wondered what this is going to do to Pat Forty now that he has to carry with him the knowledge that he'll never again be allowed on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Absolute gut punch. It continues. If you are one of the other hosts on 99.1 The Sports Animal, you are not doing your job if you don't have Pat Forty on at the very top of your show tomorrow. And how far does the "I'll fight anyone who has Pat Forty on" thing extend? Like, if I choose to have Pat on, would Brian Rice drive to Cincinnati to fight me? It continues in triumphant conclusion. I mean, if you are Pat Forty and you're taking inventory of 2021, it must go something like this. Quote, on one hand, I got to cover the same Olympics my daughter competed in, but on the other, I was banned by 99.1 The Sports Animal, so really the entire year was a push.
Bravo.
I would just like to applaud this thread for, one, making my Sunday, and just, it was a pleasure for me to get to read it into a microphone.
Well, it sort of... it hit on just the absurdity of our industry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who just seem to take what we do a little bit too seriously. And my friend Brian Rice, who I don't know from Adam, he may be, I'm sure he is a better sports talk radio host than I am. That bar is certainly not that high to clear. He may be very good and he may be a good guy, but I just, the idea of, well, this guy's banned from the airwaves. Like, okay. So there are a couple of different things there. Number one, I mean, you guys know some of the people that I work with. If I said publicly, well, if Lance McAllister or Scott Sloan or Mike McConnell or Tony or any of these guys have somebody on, we're going to fight. I just would love to see what the reaction to that would be. Number two, if somebody that I worked with made an edict that so-and-so is banned from the radio station, you're damn straight. I am absolutely having that person on immediately. Immediately. At the top of my very next show, even if I thought the guy was a total ass clown, we are absolutely having that person on. I mean, the idea that, well, he's banned from the airwaves. I mean, I would just go, yeah, pal, guess what? Not only am I having him on, he's going to sit with me for the entire show. In fact, we're going to have him on every single day this week. It sort of hit to just everything I sort of love and hate at the same time about sports talk radio. The guy's trying to create some heat with Pat Forty. And if you're Pat Forty, who you mentioned is as good as they get, extraordinarily accomplished. I've had Pat on my show before. I'm sure you guys have professional interactions with him. And I'm sure Pat's waking up on Sunday morning going, oh man, I'm never going to be on that crappy sports talk radio station in Knoxville. But that really knocks me down a rung or two. It just, and what I was most disappointed by is Brian Rice didn't respond, because I thought, all right, if this guy has a sense of humor, maybe he'll come on with me and we could joke about it. It doesn't seem like he really does have much of a sense of humor. I did not follow up and listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal on Monday to find out if there was a conclusion to this, if one of the other shows had Pat Forty on. But again, had I been in like the chair of the other show, Pat Forty would have been on immediately, just because I would have publicly had to say, all right, Brian Rice, are we fighting now? What's going to happen? Where is this going? What are we doing now? And so I really sincerely hope that happened.
I do too, for your sake, because you deserve all the best things for this thread that you put out into the world on Sunday, and I appreciate you firing it off. It brought joy to me, and maybe we'll check. Maybe, you know what? Maybe we'll have Pat Forty on this show next week with you, and we can ask him what he thought about Brian Rice.
Well, and then we're gonna tweet it out and send it to Brian Rice and see if there's gonna be fisticuffs. Knoxville to Cincinnati is only like 3.5 hours. He can get up here.
It's not far. Are
we throwing hands because Pat Forty came on the podcast? How's this work?
I love it. All right, Mo, I look forward to next week's beef, and we'll make sure we bring that up.
I'll see you guys.
All right, always great to hear from Mo, and a particularly enjoyable thread. It kind of made my day on Sunday morning getting to just read through his takedown. All right. We got growler bets, including how did we do, Jay? Let's start with us. Let's start with us before we get into some of the others.
Well, I won. I'm gonna give myself the win this week because
what do you mean you're gonna give it to yourself?
It was a two-parter, and I was closer on both. So I think that counts.
Well, sure.
So it was third down percentage for the Bengals and first quarter snaps on offense. I don't think anybody got either one right. I went through looking for the third down percentage. It was 53.3, and I didn't see any of those. So I kind of glazed over if anybody actually got the 17 right for first quarter snaps, which was a season high for this team, by the way, which has started slowly every game except for Sunday. But you had 33.3% on third down percentage. I had 50%, and it was 53.3. So I almost got that one. And then you had 12 first quarter snaps. I had 14, and it was 17. So I did. I won my first growler bet since August 19th. So that was, I'll take it.
So we have referenced a so close from our guy Daniel Bayless before, back in the Jacksonville game, who just missed the yards per attempt of Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence. Just missed it. Well, guess what? In Sunday's game, 53.3, nailed it. 53.3, he nailed the third. It was an email to me.
Okay.
Nails the third down percentage. First quarter snaps. The actual answer was 17, correct, Jay?
Yeah.
15.
Ooh.
Oh, so close. So close. I got a credit. Did not think we'd have anything.
No.
That close, considering the sadistic nature of this one. But to hit the 53.3 and to just miss the first quarter snaps by two. Oh, my goodness. I'm tempted to give you some delicious 50 West beer just for being so close, but I won't.
Yeah, he could have had a beef if he missed on the high end of the snaps, because there was actually a couple snaps that didn't count because they were wiped out by Trey Hill penalties. So you could say they still snapped the ball. It didn't count as a play. But yeah, he was under, so there's no technicality there.
No technicality, just a very close L. Congratulations.
You know who wasn't close at all?
Who's that?
Us in our run passer boot.
Oh, no.
We both. The question was, what will be biggest, the Deontay Swift receiving yards? DeAndre Smith. Yeah, sorry. Swift. The longest completion by either team, or McPherson's longest field goal. And we both booted the longest completion by either team. You said sooner or later teams are going to start paying attention to Ja'Marr Chase and not giving up these long ones, and it didn't happen. He had a 53-yarder, so that ended. That should have been the run. That's the one that won it. Swift had 43 receiving yards, and McPherson's longest field goal was 40. So both of our boots were actually the winning pick.
Don't listen to us. That was a hard one, though. I mean, I thought that was a pretty impressive run passer boot that we put together there for some three numbers that really could have gone either way. And, you know, until that one there at the end, it was 34 was the number. So, the 53 bomb happened. So we were, if it wasn't for Detroit, for some reason, bringing the safety down to sit on the under, I mean, Ja'Marr Chase just running free. I mean, at this point, like I don't understand how it keeps happening. Now, granted, I do think it was almost indefensible, the throw that Burrow made and Chase's acceleration to catch up with it in that spot right before halftime. Like, it feels like an almost indefensible spot outside of literally just putting the safety right over top, which you can do. But oh my goodness. How does it continue to happen over and over again? You feel every time you feel like somebody's going to stop them and they don't. The company that Ja'Marr Chase is in at this point, we almost it's almost like, man, should I even keep putting this stat out there because we have to keep doing it? But I mean, it's him and Randy Moss as far as best rookie starts to your rookie season. Him and Randy Moss are the only two receivers with five touchdowns and over 500 yards. I mean, Randy Moss. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
It is.
All right. So we will have, of course, much, much more on Sunday's game. Once we catch up with Jeff Zrebeck on Thursday. And a lot more coming from this week at the stadium. The good news is, and you know, do your wood knocking, not a lot of injuries to be really following too much this week or any injury news really to speak of. Everybody's doing generally well. Jackson Carmen did not eat at Mom's Spaghetti restaurant in Detroit. He just threw up from something else. But I would say all expectations point to him being back. We never did role play, I guess. I did say we were going to do some role play, and talk a little bit about, so let's do, we got to give people what we promised. Realize I just skipped over it here in my rundown. That's not a very professional move by me. It's been a very tenuous morning for me, Jay. I've had a very long day already. Anybody with little kids knows morning trips to the doctor's office do not go well. And I'm fresh off one of those. So I excuse me for not reading my rundown properly as I go by. I'm still a little broken, I think.
Who schedules kids' doctor's appointments the day after their birthday? I mean, you should have known you were going to pay for that.
Yeah. Well, I took it easy on my birthday, you know? I didn't do a big Monday. I did a regular day at work. I just had a nice little trip to 50 West for dinner and a couple of home sweet homes. And with the girls, and that was great. Like, we had fun. And that's all I needed. So it wasn't like it was some crazy thing. It was just, look, the appointment had to get done. These things fill up quickly. I took whatever I could get. And what I got was a hell of a morning.
A different kind of shots.
Oh, man. These are, no, little, I mean, and I feel so bad. Anybody that's a parent that knows, to have to know, there's no way to tell a two-year-old, like, really, you're going to get shots and you're not going to like this. You know, you're going to see blood. That's very jarring. And my daughter had all kinds of things where, because of other sicknesses around her daycare, they had to do a bunch of, like, COVID tests on her, even though she never had it, just for her to get back to go into school during kind of through the pandemic. We'd always have to go into the doctor's office for that. So she hates that place. Like, the second we get in there, she is just like, no, this is the place that stuck the things up my nose. And so she immediately goes to the dark place. And so it's never, never pleasant. Anyway, all that is a long way to say I skipped over role play on the rundown. We had a few that we wanted to get to. Let's talk about Chris Evans. Jay, you have a story up on Chris Evans right now. I highly recommend it. Again, if you're not a subscriber, please do. 50% off deal still going on right now. You can go to Hear That Podcast Growling, which is in the notes to the podcast, or you can go to any of these stories and click on the links and subscribe there. Chris Evans, he's really like my new favorite football person that I've met. I have loved every interaction we've had with him. He's just so down to earth and genuine and just a good dude. Like, and I know, like, sometimes in interviews it can come off as like, oh, that's, you know, like Russell Wilson, right? What a good dude. Like, but it feels very formulaic. It feels forced and things like this. Just feels like a kid who's just a good kid and is just happy to be honest and tell his story and hope for the best and do all he can. I mean, his story about, I loved from after the Tampa game when he's like, these guys were so big. I couldn't believe how big these guys were. And after I asked him about it on Monday, like, are the guys still feel big? Do you still feel intimidated? And he made a great point. He's like, honestly, I think the Bucs guys are just bigger than everybody else.
He's right. Not every team has Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh. Like, those guys actually are bigger than everyone else. And I think he's right. But it's just that genuine honesty. And then him telling the story about being in Detroit and, Jay, you can take it from here, I just thought was phenomenal.
Yeah, because, I mean, he was asked if it was significant that his first touchdown came in Detroit or near where he played at Michigan. And he could have said, yeah, that was cool. But he said, yes, it was very significant. And he went in to talk about why, because he was suspended from the University of Michigan football team and he was volunteering for a youth organization in which a football team that has his initials, the CE Stars, they were raising money for that by working a security detail at the game. And it was just 2 years ago on that same field where he's wondering if his time in football is done. And 2 years later, it's not over, and he's having the best game of his career, catching his first touchdown on that same exact field. And just for him to kind of open up about that and talk, I mean, yes, it was meaningful and it's a triumphant ending to the story, but a lot of players don't want to kind of make themselves vulnerable and talk about negative things in their life. And he was great. He talked about how much it meant to him and how happy he was that those kids that he was working for back in 2019 were all at the game, and he got to see him afterwards and they got to try on his helmet and they were all just having a great time catching up again. And it was a really cool moment for a guy that, like you said, just seems like a genuinely good dude.
And another Senior Bowl success story for the Bengals, of which they've had a few now. I mean, if you're talking about who's the best value of the Bengals' last couple of drafts. Okay, so I'm taking Jamar and Joe Burrow out of this. Your best value pick from last year, I mean, I would say Logan Wilson, right?
Senior Bowl.
Yeah, Senior Bowl. And this year, I would say Chris Evans. Mm-hmm. I mean, Senior Bowl. And honestly, stolen because of the Senior Bowl. That's the story. The story we got on draft night, it's the story we got in the preseason, it's the story we got again yesterday, is Brian Callahan and Zach Taylor and the rest of the staff sitting behind the end zone watching this dude roast every linebacker that tried to cover him at the Senior Bowl and saying, who is that guy? And then the scouts kind of informing them of the background of his situation and why he didn't play much and all that other stuff, and now here he is. And, you know, it has been, when we wrote about it when they coached the game as being a big deal, you know. But look back at the Senior Bowl guys that they've had. There's seven of them that they've drafted the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it includes Logan Wilson and Chris Evans, Akeem Adeniji, ADG, Akeem Davis Gaither, not Gaither, as the PA announcer in Detroit.
Gaithier, I think at Gaithier. One point he called him.
He went with a French pronunciation. It was so bad, I don't even know how to redo it. Akeem Davis Gaither also. I mean, Cam Sample. Chris Evans, Wyatt Hubert. I mean, Deontay Smith. All Senior Bowl. Seven Senior Bowl guys. All that at one point or another, whether they've had injury or other situation that's, you know, caused some other backslides, have looked like great picks. We haven't seen any of Wyatt Hubert, but you know what I mean? They've all had moments. And Logan Wilson is one of your biggest stars, and you finally got the third-round linebacker right, Senior Bowl. There's something to it, man. I mean, I do think them taking advantage of Mobile has really paid off for them in a big way, and Evans is the latest example.
Yeah, and it, you know, I was down there this year, and it's interesting to note that anybody that's been to the Senior Bowl was always at Ladd People's Stadium. It was a dump. It was just an old venue. They moved to a brand new stadium this year with a big press box suite area at Alabama State, and almost all the teams were set up in their own suites. And the Bengals coaches passed on that, and they sat in the end zone because they wanted to be closer to the offensive line drills, but they also wanted that perspective where you look right over the offensive line drills, and that's where you see the pass catching drills, and that's where they were watching Chris Evans torch these guys. And yeah, you still see it when you're up high in the press box, but that down low perspective is what really turned them onto them. And it was fortunate too, because Zach talked about this Monday that the way they did it with COVID is they had these plastic shields up and different tables, and it was a car wash situation where the players were just went from team to team to team, and they talked to all 32 teams. Well, Chris Evans' night for those interviews wasn't until later in the week, so the Bengals had already been impressed with what they saw on the field. They didn't need to ask him about any of that stuff. All they drilled in on him was the stuff that happened at Michigan, getting more background on that, and what his thoughts and philosophies were on pass protection, and they were so impressed. Zach said, guys can kind of BS that. You could tell that Chris Evans didn't. He really embraced that idea and was really in tune with the responsibilities, and that maybe that block he had to spring the long pass to Chase was maybe even more impressive than the touchdown he had. And it was just, those back-to-back experiences that 2 years ago coaching the game, and then last year, sitting out in the elements, it was rainy one day, and they were sitting out there in the rain just to get a better look at these players, has really paid off when you look at that number that you said, 7 guys from the Senior Bowl that they've drafted.
And it's been fun, Samaje Perine. But, Evans and Mixon look like a nice 1-2 right now. And I think you'll still see some of Samaje. But, as far as entering on third downs, I don't think that's going to continue for Samaje Perine anymore. I think that's going to be Chris Evans. And he's, as we said at the beginning of the year, you thought he would gradually grow into that role. I was surprised how slowly they started him. Obviously, they felt like there was really some trust factor and some nervousness about protecting Burrow in general they needed back there. The same way with playing more veterans with Xavier Suofilo at the guard spot rather than just throwing a rookie in there, give it some time. The game he had against Detroit was some serious winning of trust. The pass pro, the play on the edge that we've continued to see, I just think it all adds up to the role I think we all envisioned for Evans before the year started as that third down back that comes in and can be a real playmaker for you. So I think that's where that's going. One more role, and then we'll move on and end this. Trey Hill... They were going to give a chance, right? Let's give this guy a chance at right guard and see how he does. Jackson Carman is under the weather. He's coming off COVID. He hasn't practiced all week. Like when you're a rookie like Carman, you haven't gotten reps all week. Like it's just hard to just throw him out there. And they kind of wanted to see Trey Hill at some point anyway. So let's be honest. Lions aren't a bad time to do it. So they trot Trey Hill out there, and he has rookie moments. He's got a couple of penalties, a bad missed assignment, and they yank him for Carman, who plays as hard as he can and then throws up. Well, they brought in the backups later, too, and Hill played when he eventually had to come in for Carman when he got sick. He played much better, and they moved him over to center, notably. And he looked good. He looked good at center. I think it's going to take some time to see how quickly he could pick up some of the mental aspect of it. But, they have really been hard managing Trey Hopkins through this knee. Mm-hmm. And he seems to really be struggling with it. And we've talked a little bit about it. It's like, look, he's got the cerebral nature. He's got the length. He's got all those things that he can just go in there and play. But, he's not practicing on Wednesdays. He's been limited on Thursdays. Like, you're just seeing them really back off trying to get into the game. The second they could pull him out on Sunday, they did. You get the sense that they're really managing him. And I'm curious to see where Trey Hill ends up here. I don't think they're comfortable playing him yet. Like, I don't think they want it to end up there. But I think the question is, how long can Trey Hopkins go through a season where he just kind of stays off it during the week and tries to power through Sundays?
I mean, maybe we see it again in 2 weeks. They're not going to put Trey Hill out there against Baltimore, obviously. But if they go to New York and have a similar kind of game where they can jump on him early and feel comfortable in the second half, you get him some more snaps there, it will be interesting to see. And people forget that Trey Hopkins' ACL was week 17. I mean, it's amazing how fast he came back. So it makes sense that there's still some concern there just about the knee itself. He's cleared, obviously, but he has not played well. All the focus was on Joe Burrow's knee and his timeline, and what Trey Hopkins did shouldn't be overlooked. But his play, it hasn't been glaring. It hasn't led to any disastrous plays, but it hasn't been the level that we're used to seeing from Trey Hopkins, which isn't elite. It was, you know, he was a solid NFL center, but it has dipped this year, and they are really high on Trey Hill, but it's still, as you said, the mental part of it for a rookie is it's asking a lot to kind of take over that role of calling out the protections and all of that. But if they can do that, if they can get some leads in games against some of the weaker teams on the team, they can ease him in, and then who knows, maybe later in the year we see that change happen.
And the other advantage of Trey Hopkins not practicing is he's getting a lot more reps mm-hmm. during the week, and so you can get a feel for if he's coming along with it or not without having to put him out there on Sunday. Where and Hopkins, you don't have to worry about that. I mean, the guy is as smart as anybody on the roster, so it kind of works out both ways to judge it. But it's going to be something worth monitoring, how Trey continues to hold up, how much they continue to manage him in practice, and if we do see more sprinkling of Trey Hill into games as it goes along, because that's, you know, it's a spot they're going to have to watch. All right, now I will end it, Jay. We've given everyone what we promised. So thanks, everybody, yes. for listening. Again, Jeff Zrebeck will join us on Thursday, and we'll have a lot more on the big game Sunday in Baltimore. And then, of course, Jay and I will be in Baltimore fresh off a massive crab dinner doing the walk out there from M&T Bank Stadium and recapping everything for you. So anyway, thanks for listening. Talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.